Is there any danger in following the, or trying to search for the mechanisms? Are we missing the forest for the trees?
I think that that because of this emphasis in mechanism and the great distinguished leaders, the Nobel Prize winners and the Lewis Thomases that editorialized, I think we have a blind spot. I think profession has a blind spot for the obvious and overwhelming effect of personal behavior and culture on modern diseases. I think there is a danger, and I would in no way go back in a society that's wealthy, affluent. I would in no way detract, I don't think, a penny for fundamental research on mechanisms. If I had the opportunity, and you suggested that I should have the power and the money, if I had it, what would I do? I would certainly redirect a lot of the research in the National Cancer Institute, even the Heart Institute, and change its balance somewhat. But I don't think that the looking at basic mechanisms can be considered dangerous. I think it's the proportion of effort that goes into this that's dangerous. The failure to do good empiric research, the failure to recognize that as important or as even having a credible methodology, is a serious problem. And the people in academic medicine and National Science Foundation and National Institutes of Health, head of the National Institutes of Health, are wedded to the bench and don't regard research in areas of health behavior and public health as being prestigious or important. Fortunately, there are a few individuals, including the Heart and Lung Institute, that are vigorously pursuing this. There's another danger, and you're talking on a very profound issue. People like Wald and others point out it's clearly that it was very dangerous to engage in nuclear fission and fusion research. And once you produce the prototype, you can't control it. There are careers, invested interests, and so forth that are associated with it. If we had a rational plan in which the public had an input, we would not make the prototype. And that's what you're talking about. Should we have the prototype of the organisms that are modified in terms of their DNA? Should we stop before that? The scientific approach is to develop knowledge, exploit knowledge to its fullest, let society make the decision about whether it should be applied after it's done, and that is erroneous and dangerous. Let me pursue that just a little further. Let me give you a couple of examples. The obvious atom bomb is one. Society made the decision to use it, and the scientists then decided that they shouldn't have washed their hands of it. DNA is another. We haven't faced that issue yet. The SST was another, in where we made a conscious decision not to develop a prototype. Probably the most profound ecological decision our country has made purposely. There, I sat on the advisory committee of the Heart Council, the vascular branch, for a year, and the engineers and surgeons simply didn't understand when I said we shouldn't develop the prototype for the totally implantable, completely independent artificial heart that I'm sure pacemakers would be very interested in. Once we develop the prototype, then there will be pressures to use it and exploit it at tremendous cost to society. And they didn't understand that. You exploit technology to the fullest and you let society take the responsibility. The point is that society can't take responsibility. It's too much investing in it if you develop a prototype. So from that standpoint, it's dangerous. But that means that there should be more discussion and more democratic process before the prototype is produced.
A similar issue is kind of raised in the whether an institution gets right. involved with heart transplants, because that's not
exactly
very
exactly.
expensive.
Precisely, it's exactly the same point.
Who makes those decisions now?
You saw what happened with that. It proliferated. There were 50 institutions, and then suddenly there was one, or two, or three, and now there are two or three in this country. And that's not totally inappropriate. There should be, as I have claimed for the community model, there should be two or three demonstrations. But those decisions are made usually on the basis of prestige and a powerful figure, Unitarian or Michael DeBakey, or somebody who indicates we've got to be on the forefront of technology, and they're certainly not made by the Metropolitan Health Commission or any other body with public representation. Good point. We're paying for it as taxpayers.
Don't you believe that, you know, and from our discussions with other people, they seem to indicate that technology is going to lead them quickly, 50 years, 60 years, to the answers of arteriosclerosis, in fact, to a lot of body functions and basic understandings, and that they're going to bypass any benefit that preventive aspects could have ever accomplished. Mm-hmm. And to dwell on that would be such a waste of time, in a sense that they could be advancing so much more rapidly and finding a cure for it rather than trying to prevent it. What is your belief about that?
I think all evidence suggests that they're way off the mark. Now, I qualify that by saying that I really do think that when we understand DNA, we'll understand a lot more about individual responses, and we can tailor individual treatment, including preventive treatment, far more effectively. I don't think that we'll ever be at the position in which we say, you can eat 20 grams of salt a day safely. You can eat beefsteak 3 times a day safely. You can smoke a non-filtered cigarette safely. I don't think we'll have that kind of information. I think, again, that this approach will not work. First place, the cure won't work at all. As you know, the damage to the vessels as well as the organs that they serve is so advanced that the curative approach, the dissolving approach, that simply won't work. What you're talking about is a mechanism that will allow us to exert, either through drugs or hygiene or their combinations relatively early, a preventive effect because we understand that individual's response is better, because we understand his enzyme system, his coagulation system, so forth. Yes. I do not think that will contribute predominantly or possibly not even significantly to the prevention, mass prevention of heart attack and stroke, because I think that the burden of susceptibility is very large in the population. It's on a continuum, and it's large. Let me give you an example. It's been assumed that perhaps 10-15% of the population was susceptible to high blood pressure. So why do we worry about trying to change people's salt intake? It's only those 10-15%. Got to find out the mechanisms, find out who they are, find out by study of their circulatory responses or their angiotensin renin system or whatever, who's responsible, and then deprive them of salt through educational, motivational work. It doesn't work that way. It's more likely that they're 40, 50, 60, 80% population that is susceptible in various degrees. So when you have the genetically determined susceptibility widespread in the population, this individual tailoring treatment won't work. Even if you have the individual tailoring treatment that works and works in the highest risk group, you isolate them in a society that's totally hostile to what you're trying to determine, whether to make them more active physically or to help them stop smoking or reduce the salt in their diet, and you make it virtually impossible for them to live because of the fact you spend so much time advertising your salty soups and pushing Fritos on people. So it's all intertwined. And the magic bullet approach won't work in diseases that are predominantly culturally determined. The long-term prescription of pills won't work because there is no pill. There is no pill, even including aspirin, without profound consequences of taking it in adequate pharmacologically active doses for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, even if you could get people to behave that way. So this approach, I do not think, is efficient, or intelligent, or appropriate. The technological, pharmacological, engineering approach to prevention of our major chronic diseases, again, being high blood pressure, diabetes, stroke, heart attack, and cancer.
In order to make preventive cardiology work, what's going to have to be done?